When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke problem. Propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Yes, he's been a victim in the past. Yes, his adversaries have obsessively pursued him with phony claims. And I've been at his side defending against them when he is a victim. But this is much different. He's not a victim here. He was totally wrong that he had the right to have those documents. Those documents are among the most sensitive secrets that the country has. They have to be in the custody of the archivist. He had no right to maintain them and retain them. And he kept them in a way at Mar-a-Lago that anyone who really cares about national security, their stomach would churn at.
Well, I got to say, the way that the documents were kept is a little sus, bro. I'm just saying, it's a... How do I describe it without offending like members of my family? First off, welcome to the show. Top of the Monday to you. Dana Lash here with you to start your Monday off right, although it's going to be kind of interesting. We'll see how this goes. A lot to discuss, obviously. And you can listen across the country. You can stream the program, all that good stuff. So let me just start like right off the bat with everything. And there was a really good piece up. Again, this is why you need to subscribe to the newsletter, because Lorraine was on it and she had the exhaustive write up of literally all the, you know, the charges, all the stuff. Like she got into all of it. But I think the question comes down to whether or not, I think it's two things. The American people, or actually three. The American people think that if it's politically motivated, whether they think the charges are serious, and then also how this is going to play out in court. Because this, and I'm going to, and you guys know, I'm going to call balls and strikes, okay? Like, I don't think you need to change, you know, like Fort Liberty back to Fort Bragg or something like that. I don't think that's necessary. And I don't think that you need to do this. I don't think that you need to be keeping boxes in your bathroom. By the way, like there was like a ballroom. How many ballrooms does that place have? The boxes that were in, I think that's the photo that just really kind of got everybody. The boxes that were in the bathroom. Because that kind of, it just seems kind of crazy and haphazard and sort of messy and all this other stuff. And if anybody ever had any grandmas that were kind of like hoarders in a way, just, it looks like an episode of Hoarders. It's just, I don't know how else to put it. 38 counts, 37 against Trump, 7 against his co-defendant, and that's his valet. Now, the first 31 counts, that's the stuff that's at Mar-a-Lago. And you know, we can sit here and talk about how it's stored, but I think some of the more damaging pieces or damaging portions of this indictment, which was unsealed, I believe it was on Saturday. And I think it's his showing and sharing of information that he should not have been showing and sharing. It's a 49-page indictment, 37 criminal counts. And there's a lot of highly classified NatSec stuff in there, national security. The other issue that's really problematic in this is that I don't know how forthcoming his lawyers were with everything, because it seems as though they were kind. I mean, there were, when 34 boxes that the attorney was unaware of that apparently weren't brought to the attorney's attention. And then, I mean, there's some subterfuge there. There's no way to get around it. I don't care how much you like the guy. This is separate from this. Why? Oh, my gosh. The thing in the bathroom, that gets me. I just want to go and clean it. But he removed these boxes the day that one of his attorneys apparently, like, gave a letter to the authorities and the National Archives and Records Administration that there were no more documents at the property. So they were the day that the letter went saying that there were no more documents at the property. That's apparently when they were moving some stuff, boxes of documents, right? And so this, it's not a good situation. I'm not the only person saying that. Jonathan Turley is saying this. Alan Dershowitz is saying this. It is not a good situation. Now, there are several things that can be simultaneously true. You can believe that this is not a good situation for Trump. You can also believe that it is, yeah, of course it's politically motivated. You can also believe that, yeah, it's completely not the same standard of justice when you have people like, Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton, who can't even invoke a defense involving Presidential Records Act or declassification authority. You absolutely can say all those things, and all of those things can be simultaneously true. They absolutely can. So that's what we have to come to terms with here, because the situation with the boxes is it's a bad deal, man. It is a bad deal. And I was reading some of this. I spoke at the TPUSA event, and I was kind of going back and forth between juggling that and then reading a lot of this stuff so we could be prepared for today. And it was just one of those things where I read it, and then I had to stop and go Whiskey Tango Foxtrot and come back and read it again. Because it can be politically motivated, and you can also believe he's not helping himself when he does this stuff. Now, I want to ask a very straight no chaser question. And that question is this. With these, you know, these the way the document storage, et cetera, and K-Nile, you can weigh in on this. Is some of this him not knowing protocol? I'm asking that just, there's a part of me that just wants, I just am curious, is some of this, you think, just like him not knowing protocol?
Well, if we're to believe what's in the actual indictment, that there's a conversation for more than a year with Trump and the archivists about some of these documents. So I'm unsure if you can claim he wasn't aware of protocol.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know that there are people there that, and I'm asking that because I know some of you out there are wondering that too. It's interesting because I did ask a friend of mine, and they kind of said the same thing. And they said, plus the number of people that are around them. I mean, even if someone is in Washington for an inordinate amount of time, even if they, you know, were in the House and then they were in the Senate and they know all of these things, they're still a very small possibility of not knowing protocol, because they literally put people around you to make sure that you're, because there's so many different things, and you can't even expect someone who's, you know, maybe they've been in the swamp their whole lives and they're the outgoing commander in chief. You can't. So they put these protections there on purpose. So I want to get into, you know, the invocation of the Espionage Act. We're going to talk about that, but I do think, and I was looking at some of the polling on this, they had, and The Hill reported on this, there's an ABC News Ipsos poll saying that the charges against Trump, that the majority, you know, 40, well, not almost majority, 47% of the respondents think that the charges are politically motivated. 37 say they are not. 16% say they are not sure. But here's the, and that's a breakdown. They said most Republicans say that they're politically motivated, 80% to 71%, where Democrats say they're not rooted in politics. But here's the weird thing, though, too, is that when you look at the, regardless of whether or not it's Democrats or Republicans, when you look at the percentage of people who do believe that the charges are serious, it is a majority of both political ideologies that do believe that the charges are serious. So, I mean, there's the way that the American people interpret this as well. And we're going to get into all of these different charges, because you have, like, what, the first 31 are the documents that are at Mar-a-Lago. And then you have 36. That has to do with hiding the previous boxes. And then the document that was signed by his legal team that affirmed that there were no more boxes, nothing more at Mar-a-Lago, except there were, and they were being moved around. That's another count. I think that was 37. And then 38 is the valet, because he lied to the FBI about how many boxes were there, if the boxes were there, et cetera, et cetera. You don't lie to the FBI. Oh, my gosh. So I don't even want to have a conversation with anybody in the FBI. If they ask me what my favorite color is and I just, like, fake it and say something else than what my favorite color is, that's lying. That's a charge. You don't have to be under oath. It's weird. But I'm curious, because the storage of the boxes, I'm wondering how cooperative the Archives administration has been, because that's, you know, whether or not they helped him set it up, that's like what they do, is they set up all these other outgoing presidents. But these are serious charges showing the documents. So this is the other thing. I mean, we talked about the storage. The showcasing of some of these documents are really, really troubling. Apparently, he showed a reporter some classified national security documentation, and that reporter obviously didn't have the clearance to see it. I don't know why we're showing people this stuff. This is a serious thing. These are serious issues. And so showing people the documentation and everything else, because that was apparently, there were a couple of those instances. That's not something, and there's a lot of a number, we're going to get into that, a number of pieces on that. But you can't, like, he had one, apparently one of them was, he had showed someone a document about Iranian intelligence, or intelligence that we had on Iran. And he was telling, and this was at Bedminster in New Jersey at his golf course, and he was saying that they had some military commanders that presented me this, and he goes, you know, see, and apparently that's one of the transcripts where it was a recorded conversation. And he says, see, as president, I could have declassified it. He says this on tape, and he says, now I can't, you know, but this is still a secret. Oh my gosh. Now, I'm all for, you're innocent until proven guilty, and we got to see all this stuff. Here's the question that I want to lay out here, or the perspective I want to lay out here. The perspective isn't, well, there is a miscarriage of justice, because I completely agree with you. Nothing is treated equally, and it's infuriating, and it makes you, that doesn't, because someone else isn't treated equally under the law, does not mean that the law may or may not have been broken in a different instance. So whether or not Biden has been, which I absolutely think he's guilty. I think he should be charged. I think he should be charged with influence peddling and all of this other stuff. But you can't, it's not something that you can say exonerates, you know, Trump or Clinton or anyone else if proven guilty. There's a lot of stuff to see. Yes, it's politically motivated. Yes, it looks bad. And yes, there is an unequal application of the law. But that last one does not, that's not a defense. It just, it's a problem with this. It's a problem with the politicization of our system. And for me, the question isn't, well, why is this person charged? It's why isn't everyone treated equally under the law? That's the question I have. So we're going to talk a lot more about this, because I'm not asking people, I'm not sitting here telling anybody to jettison any kind of support or anything like that. I'm looking at this very clinically. And it's infuriating, because the way that the left has handled everything has made that almost impossible to do in our society. So we have a lot still to hit as we roll towards the bottom of this first hour. And we're going to break down a lot of this stuff. I'm going to try to keep a 30,000 foot view, but These are things you need to know so you can get ahead of some of these talking points with us. I have some exciting news for those of you who wish that you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arnn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, changing hearts.
If you're using one credit card to pay off another credit card, are you really getting rid of your debt? Add that to spending even more of your tax dollars that they don't have. That's what the federal government got from this debt deal. Any reason why another deal needs to be made in the presidential election cycle? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So the Transportation Security Administration is opening a training academy in Las Vegas. Our friend Larry, he sends all the Vegas stuff. 26,000 square foot facility at 6 classrooms. You know, the one thing that I agreed with him on that I've noted too, is that there is not any picture of like the transportation secretary at the Transportation Secretary Training Center, the Transportation Administration Training Center in Vegas. Kind of interesting. What are they gonna train on? I feel like he needs to go there more than anybody else. More than anybody else. Okay, so there is this place. So in Portland, they have a place for the homeless to go, and it's called the Safe Rest Village. And it's for the city's homeless, except now everyone says it's become a hotbed of drug dealing and crime. The Safe Rest Village. They said that the antisocial behavior has caused locals to complain. They're terrified. The homeless people who were camping out at the Peninsula Crossing Trail, they've been taken off the streets. They've been entered. This is the city's solution, except now it's total mayhem for homeowners. They say that it's running rampant with drug dealers, loud noises, crimes, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, that's what happens when the city thinks it's going to be able to accommodate crime like this. The tilt of San Francisco's Millennium Tower has deepened as engineers work to reverse the lean. It's like our own Tower of Pisa. The Bay Area's 545-foot tall Millennium Tower, it's tilting and sinking, and they can't steady the building. So they said it's slanted over a half inch deeper than previously revealed. And they said that this is crazy. I mean, how are they going to fix this? Is a mess. Like, it's literally sinking into hell. And 4 kids were saved in the Colombian jungle. They survived a plane crash for 40 days. The 13-year-old was a total hero there. Stay with us.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
When a person can be married in the morning and thrown out of the restaurant for being gay in the afternoon, something is still very wrong in
America.
Where
is this happening at? For the love of all things holy, where in the hell is this happening at? Nowhere. It's rhetorical. I'm saying because I know the answer. Welcome back to the program. It's Migraine Monday here, the Dana Show. Kane and I we're on the struggle bus. High pressure system moved into Texas and we're dying. You can stream the simulcast of the radio program, Channel 347, DirecTV, Facebook, YouTube, all that good stuff. Why he said this? When did he say this before? He said this before, like a couple of months ago. I was at TPUSA, the event. There was a thing that I did with the Texas folks Friday. Spoke with a lady Saturday, and that's one of the things that I noted. I'm like, where's the oppression taking place? I don't see it. I fail to see the oppression. Just like I noted, I fail to see the oppression of my sex. I'm told by these industry grifters who trade in feminism promises and stories and, you know, horror stories and all of this. I'm told over and over again that I'm somehow so oppressed, which I am not oppressed. Okay. In some instances, I feel like I have more power than dudes do. Honestly, can I be real for a second? I really do feel like chicks got more power than dudes in more ways than one. I really do. And I feel like when these people try to sell us this lie that we're oppressed, you're totally condescending to us. You think we're some stupid mall rats that are going to take your word as gospel truth and that we're going to believe this stuff and internalize it and develop these victim complexes that make us dependent upon the crap you're selling. I don't buy it. Who, to his point, and that's POTUS, who is married in the morning and thrown out of a restaurant for being gay? Is he like riffing off of Beavis and Butthead? So the newest season of Beavis and Butthead, they weren't thrown out of a restaurant. Beavis and Butthead, no, we're going down this road because it's that stupid. So Beavis and Butthead, like, right, in this, I grew up with that show. I grew up watching Beavis and Butthead. The intro is part of the soundtrack of my life. Very happy to share it with my older offspring. But in one of the latest episodes from the new season, like they want to get married. They want a lady, and they're morons. They go to, you know, the courthouse, and they see all the lines for, you know, getting a marriage. Or they wanted to get, what were they trying to get? They were trying to get some kind of license. Was it not their driver's license? What were they trying to do? I can't. Something. Yeah. And they were like, well, what license can we, this is taking too long. Marriage license. Okay, here we go. There's no line here. Let's go there. So they go in line and they're like, all right, we're here to get a marriage license. And the lady at the desk thinks that they want to marry each other. And the way she talks to them, they're morons. So they're interpreting it as she wants to marry both of them. And they would be in a throuple, which is a word that I wish didn't exist. And this is why I want aliens to blow our rock to bits or smod, whichever. And so they go through with it and they get married and everyone in their town thinks they're gay. And so one of the women that lives in their apartment complex, because this is, they're the older Beavis and Butthead, it goes back and forth. She always like hit them and kicked them because they were creepy and always coming on to her. And then she was like, am I the bad guy? Did I ever react? Cause these guys are gay. Then she's like, oh, I'll take you, you know, to the burger place and I'll buy your meal as a sorry. So they go there and they start bickering and then Butthead hits on her and she beats him up and walks out of the restaurant. So it's kind of similar, except no one was thrown out of a restaurant for being gay. So I don't know if that he watched that. Is that something that he watched with Maisie or one of his kids or somebody who lives at the White House? Because all the family lives at the White House now, right? Yeah. I mean, there are more Bidens living in the White House than there are more people illegally registered at one address in Houston, Texas. I mean, what in the hell? It's like a clown car for grifters. That is what they've turned the White House into. They got every Tom, Dick, Harry, Hunter, and Ashley and everybody else living all up in the White House. I mean, my gosh, we're all paying for that. You know that, right? Like, you're paying for the chef's meals for this white trash grifter family that's all up in the White House like a clown car. I mean, there are more Bidens in the White House than there are Duggars in wherever the hell the Duggars are. That's how crazy it is. So where is he getting this? A person can be married in the morning and thrown. Who in the world throws somebody out of the restaurant for being gay? Kane, what restaurant have you ever been to? Yeah. I've been in a Cracker Barrel and I never see nobody thrown out for being gay.
No, none of that at all.
Gosh, everything is so stupid. Did we accidentally get drunk or something? Were we exposed to fentanyl? I don't know. So stupid. So I just can't figure out why he keeps saying this stuff when it's so easy. Oh, by the way, do you know what he did? Hold up. Do you know? So apparently there was, remember the executive order that it was, what was, what do they call it? I'm looking at my notes here. Biden and Harris sent out this thing about Alphabet stuff and Pride, whatever. And he wants to deploy, apparently, federal agents to protect any kind of Pride events. That, I don't know if you guys saw that. So New York Times has a host, has a piece up about it. It's that he wants Congress to pass the Equality Act, which does something. I don't know. Who the hell knows what this does? He says that he wants his administration to counter the callous and cynical bills. Do you see what they're doing? They're conflating the first two letters of the alphabet with all the other ones, with the two spirit, whatever the hell that is. Sounds like possession, but, you know, who am I? Yeah, it does sound binary. Why are there only two? You know, they're conflating this with all the trans-tifa. That's what they're doing. They're conflating it with trans-tifa. So he had said that, oh, we have to act as a nation. We're going to counter these bills because I don't know what being gay has to do with chopping your bits off, but okay. And they said that he says it's a civil rights violation and that he wants to apparently protect Pride events. They put out a fact sheet. They said that the Justice Department and other agencies are going to designate officials to work with members of the the Alphabet community. This is a little hungry. About issues of concern. Federal funds are going to be dedicated for supporting programs for the parents of Alphabet youth. And police are going to train on helping victims of hate crimes and things like that. I thought all crimes were about hate. But, you know, some crimes are crimier than others. Mm-hmm. It's an official word now. I make up whatever the hell I want because I can. I can identify as whatever I want. I can make up whatever I want. Laws mean nothing. Words mean nothing. Who you are, science, biology. We live in a mad world that it's like Lewis Carroll invented it. So it's crimier, C-R-I-M-I-E-R, crimier than the regular crime. Do you know that? So like if you murder someone, if you're just like a straight person, a boring straight person, and you murder another boring straight person and it's a boring murder, it's not as crimey as if you are a boring straight person and you hatefully murder a gay person. Because see, how your victim likes to have sex is incredibly important as to what if that crime is elevated or not above other crimes. It almost sounds like it's promotion of one group over the other before the law. And you would be right if we didn't live in a completely fabricated, you know, like we are in the Matrix now. So that being said, we're going to have the Fed. We didn't get any of that for the Tea Party stuff. Can we do something real quick? Can we contrast the treatment of the people who just like wore red hats in the streets 7 years ago and the Alphabet people now? People were literally getting waylaid in the street for a red hat. Like if someone saw a red hat, they just exploded into punches. And now what? If you're Alphabet, how do you know though? Like if you're out there, if you're one of the special feds, oh my gosh. If you're one of the special feds that's out there assigned to protect the Alphabet people, then I mean, do you have to wear like a sign or a bell or something? Like a cow? I don't know. How does that work? Just to alert everyone. I'm special because I like to have sex with other people like this.
They'll tell you.
All of this is built on sex. I just want to like lay that out there one more time. I know you know this, but just to say it makes it sound crazier. So yeah, that's what they were. That's the EO we were talking about last week. That's the thing that they came out with last week. I don't know if you knew that or not. It's weird because they want to protect the Alphabet people, but there's no feds to protect the Christians in the schools. There's no, I didn't see any of that, Kane, did you?
No.
I didn't see anything like that. I didn't see any executive order about protecting Christian kids in schools from radical trans activists who want to shoot them up and kill them. Wild. I didn't see anything like that. Now, I know I have a couple of other, I can't even believe this first hour is all winding to a close already. This is wild. A few things here to touch upon. So Fox apparently sent, according to Axios, a cease and desist to Tucker. So Tucker's been doing, he's done two videos, monologues, that he's posted on Twitter. Now, apparently Axios said Fox is paying him and maintaining that his contract keeps all the content that he would do exclusive to them through December 31st of 2024, right after the election. And he's saying that it's a First Amendment argument to post on Twitter. I don't know what the details of the contract are, and I'm not even going to pretend that I know, but it is kind of interesting, the argument that's being, because you can, I think you can very easily, first off, I think that he's trolling them, which is kind of funny. And I do think that there's a First Amendment protection here. I do think you have First Amendment protections to be able to say what you want on Twitter and what, you know, and where that line is for, this is your First Amendment right to, this is like a product that you're putting out that's, that would violate your contract. I don't know where that line is because I don't know his contract, neither does anyone else. But it is interesting because he's saying it's a free speech issue, and it could be. So, gosh, allergies are horrible today. So this whole thing with, you know, the claim that he's, you know, committed a material breach of his contract, and that's what apparently is being asserted. It's getting messy. I don't think he's going to stop posting on Twitter, though. I mean, that's, again, I don't know how far some contracts that they have, you got to be real careful when you're signing, like contributors out there to different things. You have to be careful, like what you're signing. And sometimes they want to control what you're putting on social or this or that. But I don't know what his entails. Coming up, we have a couple of things. The Tony Awards, which I didn't watch, were last night. You know, I don't watch them. Can I be real with you? I'm sure that it's a great thing. I just don't. I'm not into musicals. I don't like musicals, and I can't stand anything like that because it completely just violates my suspension of disbelief that anyone would just break into song organically. So they apparently were taking pot shots at, they called the DeSantis the Grand Wizard. I'm so tired of this stuff. We're also going to get into Daniel Penny. Remember the guy, the Marine, who put a chokehold on Jordan Neely after Jordan Neely was threatening passengers? He makes a first recorded statement. So we're going to get into all of that and more. You've heard me talk about my friends at Kel-Tec for years, and it's because I really believe in them as a company and as innovators. Their firearms in design and function go above and beyond, like with the Kel-Tec P50, a revolutionary award-winning pistol that packs a punch in a compact package. The Kel-Tec P50 is perfect for home defense, for range shooting, or just even having some fun. And with its top-mounted Picatinny rail, you can easily attach your favorite optics or accessories to make it truly yours. Whether you are a seasoned shooter or you're just starting out, the Kel-Tec P50 is the perfect pistol for anyone looking for power and precision in a compact and easy-to-use package. Their firearms in design and function go above and beyond. Learn more about the P50 pistol at KeltecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. Secure your world with Kel-Tec. KelTecWeapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I was getting out of the car to go in the city hall, and there were these two well-dressed men standing in the corner. The light changed. They kissed each other and went in different directions. One went to the DuPont building. One went to the Hercules building. And I'd never seen that before. I looked at my dad. He looked back at me and said, it's simple. They love each other. It's simple.
No one believes that he saw this. He probably, like, stole that story from somebody else. I wouldn't doubt it. Welcome back. That's POTUS telling you more stories. He's really good at storytelling. Why? He said this was decades ago in Delaware. How many decades? Because I don't think that was a thing to even, I mean, not even 20 years, I don't think, right? I mean, good grief. Like, why? I don't know. I feel like he kind of compromises himself there a little bit, really. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he's I don't know. I have no words. So coming up in our second hour, we're going to look and dive deeper into these charges, the indictment, the unsealed indictment from Saturday. We're going to look at that. Dive into those. Also look at the invocation of the Espionage Act, because it's really weird. To me, we'll discuss it, but there's certain criteria that has to be met in order for the consideration of that. Plus, Freedom Caucus is going cray. The Freedom Caucus, they've paralyzed the House. There's been a revolt. I just want to watch the world burn. I'm the Joker right now. It says the conservative revolt in the House is alarming. The Senate GOP, they're alarmed. In fact, who was it? Shelley Moore Capito was saying they're going to have to sort it out over there. They said 11 conservatives blocked a bunch of messaging bills from reaching House floor for votes. They said that they're going to keep doing it. I love the way the House works. We'll see if they get what they want or if any kind of resolution is made. So we're gonna dive into that also. And we've got some wokery. If you're tired of lame beer, we're gonna talk to a guy who made a new beer. They sent me some. I haven't had any yet.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
No. I have it. I have a sixer.
Right.
But I have not had any yet of the beer. Are you on your weird, your bacteria tea drinking diet still with all your juices, or can you have beer?
What do you mean? I always do the probiotic stuff. It's not like there's an end to it or something. Like, oh, you done doing that healthy stuff?
He's like a bacteria farmer. He brings in his, what do they call them, the Scobies?
It's
Isn't
true.
That the name of that dude that speaks for that ginger?
Well,
and
I
his
do.
Suitcase
it's
girlfriend?
More about water kefir now than kombucha, but yeah.
Okay. So it's shipping begins this week, apparently. It's a new beer.
I can't wait to try it.
If you're tired of that beer, I heard that it's brewed by eagles.
What?
Yeah, on the top of Mount Rushmore.
Then I definitely want to try.
That's what I hear. I'm told that. I mean, I can tell you whatever I want to, right? That's the world we live in. That's what I was told. I mean, if it's a person that identifies as an eagle, does that matter? No. I'm just saying. We're going to talk to Seth Weathers about that coming up. We got a whole bunch. You don't want to miss. Second hour on the way. Don't go anywhere or we'll know and we'll find you.
Dana, the standard is clear. The standard is Navy versus Egan, a 1988 case, unanimous decision from the court that Justice Blackmun wrote the opinion. And it said the president's ability to classify and control access to national security information flows from the Constitution. He decides. He alone decides. He said he didn't classify this material. He can put it wherever he wants. He can handle it however he wants. That's the law. That's the standard. And Jack Smith can do all this 37 different counts, whatever he wants to do. But that doesn't change the standard. The standard that the Supreme Court in a unanimous decision said was that he can classify and he can control access. He has the sole authority.
So welcome back to the program. That is Jim Jordan, who was on CNN over the weekend talking about the authority that the president has under the Presidential Records Act to determine what is official or rather what is personal from presidential in terms of records, and that the National Archives lacks the similar authority to contradict him or object on his action. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, top of the second hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program as well on YouTube, Facebook, and Channel 347 DirecTV. So this is the main thrust, I think, of the defense in terms of this, the unsealed indictment now in these 37 counts. And it's interesting because some, and I've seen this touched on a couple of different places, and a friend of mine actually sent me this case. This is a Reuters piece that gets into the Bill Clinton sock drawer. It's actually kind of, this is what the legal team, and well, rather the former president and some of his legal surrogates, are relying on when they're talking about the Presidential Records Act. So it gets into Donald Trump, the Presidential Records Act, and Clinton's sock drawer defense. And so I know it's weird, but we're going to bring the tugboat to shore. The issue touches on, literally it touches on Bill Clinton's sock drawer. Because GQ, and they did this, they had this Q&A in 2009, and they talked about Bill Clinton squirreling away cassettes in his sock drawer. And it was focusing on how Clinton was handling tapes after he left office, and he designated the recordings as personal records, not official presidential records, and therefore did not have to turn those over under the Presidential Records Act. And the and Judicial Watch, which is an independent think tank, they sued over Clinton's designation of those tapes, and they said that the tapes included classified information and conversations that Clinton had with foreign leaders. But there was that 2012 opinion with the judge overseeing this watch from Judicial Lawsuit, which is a conservative-leaning think tank. And they said that even if the tapes should have been designated to the Presidential Records, she could not order the National Archives to recategorize them, saying, quote, the Presidential Records Act does not confer any mandatory or even discretional authority on the archivist. And that's Amy Berman Jackson. She wrote this in 2012. By the way, Amy Berman Jackson was one of the people who was under consideration for SCOTUS, if you might remember. This was a 2012 ruling. She said under the statute, this responsibility is left solely to the president. And so this is what a lot of his legal surrogates have been saying. It's kind of interesting that a Judicial Watch, it seemed like a loss for Judicial Watch at the time, and now it's coming back with us. It's very interesting. But they were saying that the tapes that he put in his sock drawer, he was trying to say it was personal, not presidential. They said, in fact, one of the, this was Jason Barron, who is the former National Archives litigation director, and they were saying that it was in the nature of a diary or journal in recorded form, but the documents that have classified markings, he said, that was a government record. So they're now they're this is something that's going to prevail in court. And I will caution you because everyone, this is the time when everyone wants to be an expert on the Presidential Records Act. But there's case law to support that. This is going to get down to in really in the weeds in court. But it's I think it comes down to, are these presidential records or are these personal? And then this ruling, which does have some weight here, it has weight. And that's so they're talking about the sock drawer. But the one thing too is that, so Berman Jackson, this ruling in 2012 was a circuit court ruling. So it sets precedent, but not in the way that you might think it does. It's not going, because this is not so much a criminal charge. I do, at least, you know, on the issue of presidential versus personal. So what my legal friends are telling me is that it is not going to impact this the way that you think it would, because it is a circuit court decision and it does not curtail specific like criminal charges. And when Berman Jackson made her decision, it was not on the, it was looking at the National Archives' ability to get involved and contest Clinton's discretion at the time in terms of declassifying presidential records. And in fact, let me pull this up. The piece says the only reference in the entire statute to the designation of records as personal versus presidential also calls for a decision to be made by the executive and made during and not after the presidency. So the materials that are produced or received by the president, blah, 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 blah. This is the Records Act contains no provision obligating or permitting the archivist, et cetera, et cetera. The timing is also incredibly important, and that's what it touches on. The argument is that they're trying to figure out, they're trying to assert that the president has the determination to state what is or is not a presidential record as opposed to personal. But Jackson says that the archivist did not have enforcement options in that. And then, of course, the classification markings apparently factor in. So this is going to be, that's, I think everything is going to kind of set on that. I think that's where the crux of everything is going to sit. And I do think, and my friend, by the way, I'll just have you, and I don't want to name them because they are a practicing attorney, but they're very much, they were one of the individuals that was involved in all the Trump stuff, state by state. But they were saying that they don't necessarily see that as being a fail-safe defense, which that's troubling. So that's going to be determined in court. That's going to fall. But then you also have that decision in the court of public opinion. So there's a lot of things here. This to me is completely separate from, let me pull this up, which if I'm being very honest with you, I realize that they're settling on this because there are some in the indictment, and if proven in court, that's going to be tough. That he was showing classified, top secret paperwork documents about defense and national security. And that's kind of troubling. And there was the one recorded statement that he had made, and I had read to you last hour, where he was acknowledging that one of the documents that he had shown a reporter as it related to Iran was not something that he had declassified. He said he could, but he didn't at the time. That is a little troubling. A lot troubling. So, and that's one of the things that this case, and my friend noted that as well, you can't like retcon the declassification, if that makes sense. Like you can't go back and say, no, that should be disclassified too. I mean, that power is only yours so long as you are in elected office and not out of elected office. So that timeline is going to be incredibly important as well. And the audio statement and some of the other things as relayed in this indictment don't support the assertion that some of this stuff was done, or that all of it was done while he was in elected office, if that makes sense. So there's some trouble. I know. I'm the same thing. This is not based on hearsay. It's not like he said, she said. There's like evidence. That's what this indictment is based on, like actual photos and dates and audio recordings. It's not he said, she said. That's what makes this very different. That's why you have Jonathan Turley and others, even Dershowitz. My gosh, he comes out and says, oh, boy. He says this is it's kind of troubling. He said that he had a piece out. And he came to the conclusion, I'll add, that R. Lorraine did over at Chapter and Verse as well. He said that it was a strong indictment. Dershowitz said, but is it strong enough? And that's the thing. It should have been a civil investigation, he noted, and it went to a multi-count criminal indictment. And that he said he talked about the cooperation and working with, because there is the moving around of boxes, etc. The indictment also includes, and I mentioned that, the recorded conversations, because you had one between, I mean, the writer that he was, that he had a writer, a publisher, and two Trump staffers, and they were talking about whether or not a senior military official had persuaded him to order an attack on a country, which, from what it sounds like, was Iran. And then he pointed to some paperwork and then said that military officials supported the attack and that this totally wins my case. And then he had said on tape, this is secret information. Look. And that's when he said, see, as president, I could have declassified it. Now I can't, but it's still secret. That right there, that's like, oh my gosh, why? And the issue, one of the things Dershowitz noted, he says it's possible that Trump merely waved the papers in front of his guests and never gave them the opportunity to read them, which is apparently not in evidence because they don't have the documents. He said, but even that is not enough to support the charge of willfully possessing the material, he said, the hypotheticals, in an unauthorized manner. He said, but the recording is self-proving because it's not a witness. It's not an antagonist. It's not some sort of talking head that was once on MSNBC or CNN. It's himself. That's really tough. That's a really tough thing. And so the other thing he noted is whether or not prosecutors had evidence that his actions damaged national security more than Biden, Pence, or Clinton. And that's something that prosecutors will have to prove. So this is just... It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. But why are we... Can I also point this out? And this is what aggravates me. I'm not saying this as a way to diminish any kind of concerns, which will have their day in court on the Trump situation. But oh my gosh, why is the same thing not being said of Biden? Biden has had his... I mean, at least... Oh gosh, I don't even want to do this. Trump's stuff was in a bathroom in Mar-a-Lago. It wasn't like it was in a garage that a cokehead had access to. They're both bad. I'm not saying that it isn't bad, but I'm just saying, why is the reaction to Biden's not the same or worse? That makes people not want to treat Trump's situation with any kind of severity, because they see this unequal application of law, and that makes people resentful, and it makes them not want to follow the law. The best way to get people to not follow the law is to not uphold it. And you cannot tell me that with everything that we saw with Biden, you cannot tell me that there was not mishandling worthy or that merited the same reaction. I, for crying out loud, you want to talk about exposition and foreign entities and top secret information, the Biden Penn Center, which is a shared space with a CCP entity. I mean, didn't James Comey, what was his argument with Clinton? He was saying that she did not have any kind of intent required for a charge to distribute it, the information, and what Trump does because he hid it in Mar-a-Lago, and that was the reason Comey didn't charge Hillary. Isn't that the argument that he gave? This is so asinine. And so the president in here, Biden, you don't even know what foreign eyes have seen those, particularly the stuff in the Penn Biden Center.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So now there's speculation that Egypt's most famous pharaoh may have kicked the bucket due to a drunk driving crash. New research emerges that the teenage King Pharaoh Tut, King Tut, he liked to race chariots and drink wine, apparently at the same time. And apparently the theory from a biomedical Egyptologist says that they think that he may have actually been killed in a drunk chariot driving accident. Isn't that interesting? It was on BBC Science Focus. Things that you never thought would ever be a thing you said. Huh. Kim Jong-un says he wants to strengthen the relationship with Putin and develop a North Korea-Russian cooperation. Maybe they can teach Russia how to keep all their lights off all the time because they don't have the infrastructure to support security too. Oh, what? Military horse-drawn funerals at Arlington suspended until mid-2024. The Army has extended its suspension of providing horse-drawn carriages, all of this for military funeral honors at Arlington National Cemetery all the way through June of next year. They said they're rehabilitating 27 horses and resetting the troubled program. They said that they're reviewing the herd's living conditions. We're going to talk about Righty Beer next. Stay with us.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
America's been drinking beer from a company that doesn't even know which restroom to use. That's why I created Conservative Dad's ultra-right, 100% woke-free beer. As conservatives, we're constantly getting hit in the face, left and right, by the woke mind virus. But the last place we want it is in our beer. If you know which bathroom to use, you know what beer you should be drinking. Stop giving money to woke corporations that hate our values. And to the rest of you woke corporations, say that from our kids.
I like how he censored himself there, the very end. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. That was a commercial for a beer. They don't, just to tell everybody, they don't advertise on the show or anything. We just hate the fact that an iconic drink that I think is just as American as apple pie and baseball, it's like that it's being destroyed by this Marxist cultural garbage that we see that's affecting everything from football to NASCAR to all this. And can I just say, and I don't care, I can say it because I'm a chick. Guys can't say this. I would rather drink beer that's been brewed by a dad than some chick that does this like 60-second long commercial talking about women that brew beer. I mean, sandwiches is one thing, beer is another. Oh, Joining us right now, though, is the brains behind all of this. This is it's a great beer. It is a really great beer. Seth Weathers is he's been involved in all kinds of politics, national and state level. The website is Ultra Right Beer, and that's actually what it's called. I almost turned this sideways so people could see the can, but it's open. That would have been a disaster. Ultra Right Beer, and I did read the ingredients, and it's I hear that it's actually brewed by eagles on the top of Mount Rushmore. Seth, is that true?
There's some truth to that for sure.
Thought so.
But we're excited about it. You do, your patriotism does increase per beer.
Nice. That's, I mean, we don't have like a patriotism alcohol content reader. We should probably get one. Now I have a can here. I've not had it yet. I've had one, like I got it and then it's been a crazy weekend. So I'm like, oh my gosh, throw it in the fridge and I'm just going to wait till you're on air. So I hope it's not bad, but I'm sure it's going to be delicious.
This will be the test.
Hmm. It's for educational purposes. I feel like I got to say that.
That is true.
Oh, kids, I almost don't want anyone else to get it because so I'm going to tell everybody it's horrible so they don't order it and I can have all. It's actually really good. This is a really good beer. Ultra Right Beer. There's my lipstick stain on it. This is so wait a minute. You got mad because of the Bud Light stuff and you just came out with your own beer.
Yeah, I don't know that. I was probably mad.
Again, for education.
I was going to say I didn't get mad. I probably got mad. I got pissed off, I guess would be a way of wording it, when we saw what was going on. And look, as you know, we're seeing this everywhere in 50 different categories of products and stuff, and we can't boycott everything. But I saw this and I said, God, I wish I knew how to make beer. And fun fact, I still don't know how to make beer. However, I have hired people that know how to make beer. It takes many years to develop knowledge of making beer.
Right.
So I'm not going to claim to be a brewmaster, but we have an incredible brewmaster.
That's awesome. It tastes great. This is a great beer.
Thank you. It really is a solid beer. A lot of people think because of the Bud Light, we came out of the Bud Light controversy. I think a lot of people think we were trying to copy Bud Light. We're not. This is not beer flavored water. That's what Bud Light is. That's the best thing I can say in your air about their beer.
So I would wash my Ultra Right glasses with Bud Light, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Okay, and then fill them with Ultra Right.
There you go. That makes sense. That makes sense. 100% woke free American beer. So you started this really this was in the works before the Bud Light stuff.
No. This is the most incredible. Like the fact that we have a federal license, we've got state license in multiple states, all the things that's come together and the time that it's come together is almost unbelievable for people in the industry if you ask them if it was possible. So this came about, we put out that video on social media. On my Twitter alone, I think it's somewhere around 46 million views. I think we're around 100 million total views on that ad online everywhere just from being viral. Thank you, Elon Musk. The reality is this actually would not exist without Elon Musk because it would have never been allowed to have the kind of traction it had on social media, on Twitter specifically, that it did had he not taken over previously.
Yeah, you say that on the website, conservatives will no longer complain about big corporations. We're going to dump them. I love that you just created a solution. You just got mad and you're like, I'm not going to I'm just going to create something.
Yes, because the thing is, like, conservatives, we moan and yell about the stuff that happens to, and, companies come out, they dump all over us. Maybe we skip a couple football games, but then we're right back in the stands. And look, I also kind of understand that. Like, I've got kids that want to go to sports events and all these kinds of things, too. We can't boycott everything. Mm-hmm. If we did, we'd have to turn off the television, everything we're watching right now, because all these parts to video all this is made in communist China. So I understand that. However, we can pick one. I've said for over a decade now, and I just kind of saw this is the moment. Said for over a decade, we have to pick one corporation that takes an egregious dump on conservatives, and we have to single them out and cause permanent economic harm. And that's what's actually happening with Bud Light, with what's going on here. Their brand is decimated. You're not coming. Bud Light is going to forever. It will never reach the levels of what it was. And I actually think it will continue a slow decline down. Right now, you got a lot of corporations, from airlines, et cetera, keeping them afloat. But I think over time, there's going to be less renewals there. And they're going to go and they're going to essentially disappear.
Yeah.
Anheuser-Busch obviously will survive that. But, Bud Light is a brand within itself, almost like a company within itself. And I think seeing conservatives finally stick to this is incredible. And to be part of that, we're extremely excited. And we've just crashed the surface right now. There's so much stuff coming down the next few weeks that we're excited about with this that I think is going to excite a lot of people as well. So
that's
we're
awesome.
Excited.
We're talking with Seth Weathers. He's the CEO of Freedom Speaks Up and also Conservative Dad's Ultra right beer. I love that it's also conservative dad's ultra right beer, because I feel like that's something you can trust. You know, like my, so I'm from St. Louis. Like I lived legit three blocks away from Anheuser-Busch. I would drive by the Clydesdales almost like every day. If I was like, if I went south, if I had to go to the supermarket or something, I would drive by the Clydesdales almost every day. You could smell the barley and hops in the air at night when it was brewing. And so that was like, to see them do that, Kane and I, as St. Louisans, we're in Dallas now, that hurt, that like hurt my psyche. That hurt my soul. And I was so mad. My family was livid over this. But this is like something my stepdad would make. This is great.
It's an iconic American brand, and they've just decimated it. You know, I've talked to so many people in the industry now, and people are talking that I was talking to a guy that's been in the beer industry for 37 years the other day. And he told me, he said, I've never seen anything like this. Just the level of destruction to a brand nearly overnight. It's just, there's nothing like it. I mean, they'll do case studies on how they destroyed a brand.
Let me ask you about that too, because I mean, I really do think that, I mean, it started with conservatives that were really speaking. I think conservatives and some classical liberals and people who just, they want to be left alone. They want their kids to be left alone. But this really was, it even grew past that. I mean, you can't see a company that is so destroyed, it destroys one of its, like, you know, big products and reputations the way they did without half of America doing it.
Agreed. And what's wild about it is, so they, you know, they came out with their initial statement saying that what's her name, the VP of marketing, is on leave. And, you know, some conservatives want to quickly say, oh, victory lap, we won. It was not a victory. You read further into their statement, they're continuing to dump. Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch is continuing to dump on conservatives. You read further into that statement and it talks about her personal safety and their concern for it, implying, oh, we put her in hiding because conservatives are so dangerous because of this backlash. She needs to be, her safety's of concern here. So they're continuing to dumb us. And I know personally, Anheuser is not going to do anything to walk this back. They will not walk it back. They're trying to say, well, it wasn't a full TV ad. It wasn't, no one cares. Do you disavow it or not? They will not. I don't care what anyone thinks. They will never disavow it. And putting someone on a highly paid leave for a little while for their safety from conservatives is not a victory. So these guys, again, permanent economic harm. They need to crash and burn from this. They need to be a burning example for corporations everywhere to leave people alone.
Yeah, completely agree. We're talking to Seth Weathers, who is behind Conservative Dad's ultra-right beer, 100% woke-free American beer. I love the can too. Please don't ever change the can, because if I see this, if I see this like on store shelves, I'm like, oh, I got to reach for this one. This is the one I'm going to reach for. I mean, that was a great idea.
Thank you. It is a great can. You will see it on store shelves, depending on your state, very soon as well. So we're really excited about that.
So now, do you have others like the koozies? And so just let me get. This is what I grew up with. I grew up with my stepdad who would listen to Jack Buck. Call the cards every summer. He would go outside grilling pork steaks. It's like a thing in St. Louis. He would go out on the deck. He'd put his hat on. He'd have his beers. You know, he'd have all his barbecue implements. And he would go out there and he would grill all afternoon, listen to the game, drink his beer. But he likes to have all the accessories. So can we do we have all that too?
We have it coming. So the koozies, we don't. I think we probably should have sent you some glasses, hats, probably shirts too. But the koozies are coming.
I want to buy them because I'm going to send it to his Father's Day.
Well, I'll get you some. Don't worry.
Oh, let me buy it. I want to support the company, and I can also be like, I got you this for Father's Day.
Well, you're drinking one of the first. That is from
education.
Our sample run. They're exactly educational. That's from our first run. There are very few of those original batches. Our first.
So this is like a collector's item. I'm drinking.
Yeah, you're drinking a collector's item.
Jiminy Christmas.
But goodness. We are, our first major canning begins this week. So we're canning a ton of beer that's getting shipped out to people that have ordered all across the country. You probably know it was a 30-day pre-order. That got extended to 60 days because our first brewer canceled us. I would like to discuss them.
Your first brewer canceled you.
They did.
What?
That was unfortunate. They, they lied. They put it, the press came to them and they were they disowned me three times before the rooster crowed. I felt very harmed by this. People were going to make bad jokes out of that.
No,
I'm sorry.
That's so wow.
It was sacrilegious. However, so they came out. Newsweek is one of the worst, by the way. Those people, if they could be sued for false headlines, I've got like five lawsuits against them. But nonetheless, they, you know, Newsweek, everyone started contacting them, you know, are you going to make this bigoted beer or whatever they called it, to them? And they're like, oh God, no, we're so afraid. No, we didn't know about the ad or anything. I've got emails from them. But again, yeah. I can't say the words I'd like to describe these.
We feel men it.
To
we feel
involved,
it.
But I think you could guess. You could probably guess.
Yeah, I can guess some choice dad words. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Men like that are why we, quote unquote, men like that are why we have the problem we have in America, which is part of why we're doing what we're doing. And I'm sick of men being that word I won't use on your show because I respect your show.
No, thank
However,
you.
There's a lot of men in America that currently are in that unfortunate situation. And I think testosterone would help for sure. But there's a lot of other things. And again, we're trying to encourage people through the, this is a movement. This is a movement that's a catalyst, this beer, and I want it to be the best beer in the world, but we also have a movement. And I think people have joined on, they see what we're trying to do. And we've got, you know, one thing we're going to be doing in the future is we're going to be putting on all the cans in the future, but not all, many cans in the future are going to have where you can scan a QR code and find out where to register to vote. Because there are a ton of conservatives, even in rural areas, even shockingly high numbers in rural areas, that are conservative, that don't vote. They're literally not registered. And anyone that's drinking Conservative Dad's ultra-right beer, I am confident if they register to vote, I'll be happy with how they vote. And so that's something that we're coming out with later in the year with our future cans. And I think that's, and we're working with Scott Pressler on that.
I think you just became my best friend saying that. That's one of the smartest things I've ever heard. And I wish all these other people, I wish that Republicans were doing this more and like really like merging out the signing up, registering people to vote.
We will do more. You know, the Republican Party conventions this past weekend, everyone gets together and is angry at each other over this, that, and the other. And I turned to someone, I said, we're going to register more votes and cause more outcome by just being out in the community, pushing this as the catalyst to get people registered. And we've got like 10 other things like that along the way that we're going to do that we're really excited about. And again, so this will be a lot of people drink beer way more than the amount of people that actually vote. And again, if we can get those people motivated and excited when they're looking at the can, they scan it. We go to Scott Pressler's organization. He has a new organization that's really exciting to help people register to vote. They handle it from there. We're getting more conservatives to vote. Because it's conservatives talk a lot,
right?
But a lot of them don't vote. They never vote in primaries.
Yeah, they don't. The turnout is what gets us every single time. It's the turnout. Absolutely. This is a great beer. It's Conservative Dad's ultra-right beer. Is delicious. Y'all can visit ultrarightbeer.com. Shipping starts this week. And if you love America, you're going to start stocking your fridge with it. You're going to start putting it in your coolers. Because everyone thinks that, like, I guess InBev only does Bud Light. I'm like, oh, y'all, you don't realize everything that
it's
they
like
make.
Everything.
It's a ton of stuff.
It's unbelievable. I can't believe, by the way, that we didn't pay you for that last line. I want to make that statement, but that was great.
Oh, yeah, I'm so happy that you're doing this. Seth Weathers, ultrarightbeer.com. If you love America, you're going to order this beer. And if you're a communist, you're not. So there you go. It's just that simple. This is great. Shipping starts this week. Seth, keep us updated about all the stuff you got coming out, and we'll talk more.
Will do. Thanks,
awesome.
Dana.
Congratulations. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Mm-hmm. All right. So a couple of things here for you. This is where we're talking about beer on break here. So we know that there's gators in Florida. We know that they have gators. We know that they have snakes and boa constrictors and all this other stuff. But of all the things that I have ever seen, I never thought I would see like a legit straight up bear come out of the ocean. This is crazy. So this was in Destin. And I know that there are bears in Florida. I know that, but this was kind of wild. Like all these beach goers, they were in the surf in Destin, and all of a sudden a bear comes up out of the water. They said it was pretty bewildering, and it showed, and it was a younger bear. It was a young black bear. And the cub is, you know, playing in the knee deep water right there with all the, and someone said that a man was yelling out bear, and you would expect shark or dolphin, but not bear. And it was a really crowded beach. And they said that, you know, everybody said that they thought, you know, it was nice to see him, you know, play. He's fine in the water. He was, you know, safe in the water. But my one of the things that a charter boat captain told the New York Post is that it's not uncommon for bears to swim in the Gulf. He's like, I've seen it multiple times. He's like, they swim across the bay. Sometimes they go for a swim. He's like, everybody has cell phones now and they just get pictures. Florida Fish and Wildlife say there's like 4,000 black bears in Florida. But so here was my concern. If there's a baby bear out there, that means there's a mama bear somewhere. And how many of you are familiar with mama bears in Nat Geo? Uh-oh. I mean, yeah. So I'm just saying, kind of, you know, I don't know. I don't want no mama bear to go and get nobody. But yeah, now you got to worry about bears in the water in Florida. Stick with us.
And that's the critical distinction here between Mr. Trump and former Vice President Pence, President Biden, Secretary Clinton, is that there was no evidence that they willfully concealed material that was national defense information and that they attempted to obstruct the efforts by the National Archives and the Department of Justice to retrieve that information.
What? I mean, hi, Bleach bit, do we remember that? The whole scrubbing of the, or wait, no, how did she put it? I wiped my server.
Yeah, Bleach bit.
Yeah, I didn't know. Like, what difference does it make? She literally used a special tool to remove those emails. And she never, like, actually was totally honest about it. She never was, I mean, she had to get a special tool. And it's something to specifically delete things to the netherverse. And you have to, I mean, it's like a very specific step, a very specific, you know, process. It's not accidental. One would say you have to really do it on purpose. So for them...
Yeah.
To argue, I just, oh my gosh, like an accident led process blight spot, and I used it to wipe my server. It's all accident. That's not how that. That's
like with the cloth.
Yeah, that's, it's not something that accidentally happens. She did it on purpose.
She smashed phones.
I'm sure she just fell down a whole bunch of times. Right? I mean, I'm sure she fell.
You're
down.
You're saying she fell down and all those phones got smashed. Because she fell down a bunch of times? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, you saw her fall on the street and lose her Tory Burch flat.
That's true.
And the dirty curb.
That is
you
true.
Know, I'm just saying. No, I totally believe she completely did.
And how
I think she went ham
something?
On it. She took a hammer and went ham on that.
How is that not, though, intentionally trying to hide something by smashing phones? What is this Goldman guy saying?
That's a million-dollar question. I mean, if I'm going to smash something with a hammer, I kind of mean to do it on purpose.
Yeah.
Who, I don't know who, so this audio, and welcome back, top of our third hour, your lovable curmudgeon, your hostess, Dana Lash here with you, and Kane and I are just simply musing on, I mean, she literally, the FBI, we didn't say this, the FBI said she said this.
Yes.
They literally, they said she did this. We didn't say she did this, she did this, her FBI said. They said that she just destroyed two phones by breaking them in half or hitting them with a hammer. And this was from documents that the FBI released. So you have this schmuck, Dan Goldman, who's like, oh, there's no evidence that she willfully concealed evidence or tried to obstruct the efforts.
Okay.
Well, what do you call beating it with a hammer? Is that not trying to obstruct the efforts? I'm just curious. Isn't that what that is? You're trying to obstruct the efforts of investigators because you're destroying it with a hammer. Have you ever picked up a hammer and beaten a phone on accident?
No. On accident? No. Never.
I've never used a hammer accidentally for anything. This is so stupid. Why do they do this? There's no, well, see, it's different with her because it was on accident. It's not though. So we've been talking about the indictment. He's not being charged with the way that the stuff was stored. He's being, the indictments, by the way, the charges stem from him. They're saying that he's not upfront with he and his attorneys were not upfront with the authorities about the documents. and that they lied to them and then kept moving them around so they wouldn't be found. That's what the charges are, just in layman's terms. So we'll see. I know some people keep focus. I mean, I do think it's kind of crazy to have that many boxes like that in your. I'm just like, that's a bug haven. Like, what is happening here? But it's the 37 felony counts. It's willful retention, lying, and that's where they're getting the. Why they're saying that it was obstruction. So if they prove in court, and for this to be in Miami, that's going to be, I mean, if that, because Miami's super, you know, pretty conservative, if they get a conviction in Florida that he had lied to authorities, because that's the narrative that Biden's camp is pushing. They're like, oh, well, we didn't obstruct anything. Do you find that hard to believe considering the stuff he has goes back to 1974?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
How is it not an obstruction to not know that you have classified information if you're Biden going all the way back to 1974 and people have been there and they've been asking for it? I mean, is that not lying if they ask you if you have other stuff and you do, but you say no?
True.
I mean, I'm asking. It seems like that. All right. So the indictment, and we'll see. We're going to talk to Andy McCarthy about get into the weeds with some of the legalities of it. Like, why does not the Judicial Watch case, why does that, you know, even though it's a circuit court, that precedent doesn't count. We're going to talk a little bit about that and get into some of that. But in the meantime, also, remember Daniel Penny, the Marine who was saving fellow passengers, fellow riders on the subway. He gave he was basically just talking into a camera. It wasn't really so much an interview. His lawyers released a video of him discussing what had happened, and he denied deliberately killing Jordan Neely. He disputed that the restraint lasted 15 minutes. He said that he had a moral obligation to protect his fellow passengers, and he had also said that it lasted about 5 minutes. And so he said that the man appeared to be on drugs. He said he ripped his jacket off and threw it down at the people sitting next to me on my left. And he also reiterated what we've heard from a lot of the witnesses, that which nobody in the press wants to talk about, that he was telling people he was going to kill them. He was telling people that I'm going to kill you. I'm prepared to go to jail for life, and I'm willing to die. He was saying this over and over again to these people. Listen to this. This is audio. Which one is this?
23.
Oh, just somebody 23. This was some of the video, and he was explaining, and again, I want to reiterate, this is what one of the witnesses told the New York Post. Listen.
The doors closed, and he ripped his jacket off and threw it at the people sitting down to my left. I was listening to music at the time, and he was yelling, so I took my headphones out to hear what he was yelling. And the three main threats that he repeated over and over was, I'm going to kill you. I'm prepared to go to jail for life, and I'm willing to die. You know, this was a scary situation, and Mr. Neely came on. He was threatening. I'm 6'2", and he was taller than me. So it was, and there's a common misconception that Marines don't get scared. We're actually taught one of our core values is courage, and courage is not the absence of fear, but how you handle fear. And, you know, I was scared for myself, but I looked around, I saw women and children. He was yelling in their faces, saying these threats. I couldn't just sit still.
And people were scared. I mean, when Neely was being more and more aggressive, and this had been going on for long enough that there was a thread on Reddit that predated all of this by a couple of years, where people were specifically talking about him. They had photos of him, and they were talking about his increasingly hostile and violent nature. And I mean, you know, the family that's trying to sue this Daniel Penny, I'm like, well, where were you all at when this was happening? You guys proclaimed to care so much. I guess what, there was no money in it for you at the time? Is that what that was? But this, he had every right to, and I mean, he legitimately, I mean, this, it's, that guy sounds like he, I mean, and everything from the witnesses who came forward, the one who talked to the New York Post had said that she was legitimately worried for her own safety. And she was saying that that this guy, that Jordan Neely, was getting more and more and more aggressive and hostile and all of this, and they were all incredibly worried about, you know, what was going to happen. They were worried about their safety. That makes complete, total sense. Why would you, he felt, you know, unfortunately, that he had to, I mean, it was threatening enough that he had to engage. And he's like, it only lasted, he's like, this was 5 minutes. Now, see, this is what I've heard also, because other people were saying that it was not 15 minutes. I don't even know where that talking point first came from. I mean, it's not even 15 minutes in the video. So I don't know where they were getting that. But we're going to see, because, you know, you can't defend yourself in New York. You're supposed to allow yourself to be assaulted, because it is more of a virtue to sacrifice yourself at the altar of the restorative justice that coddles and protect criminals, as opposed to actually, you know, protecting yourself and your loved ones. A couple of other things to hit in Philly. This is crazy. I-95 collapsed, and they had a tanker fire, a tanker truck fire in Northeast Philly, and it led to the partial collapse of an elevated section of I-95, and it closed the highway in the area. And it was, I mean, this was, the photos are horrible. I mean, it's, golly, what a huge chunk of highway. This I-95 collapse. And they were saying that the truck driver, he had 8,500 gallons of fuel that it lost control and crashed. And that caused this inferno. And it was Sunday morning. He took this exit ramp and lost control, hit the wall while trying to navigate this curve. And that's according to their Department of Transportation. It landed on its side. The crash into the wall ignited the fire. And then they had massive chunks of the overpass that just collapsed. They did find the remains of the driver. And they issued a disaster declaration as well. That is such a major, I mean, it looks so bad. They were able to clear some of the debris up, but how long do you think that Kane, you were saying that looks like it's going to be closed for a significant amount of time.
Yeah, from people I know that live in the area, and I think Steve even knows people that live in the area, that for I-95 to be connected to the turnpike took forever, took a long, I mean, multiple years. So now we're looking at a situation where they have to route traffic a certain way, which is going to take some time before they even get to the actual repairs. It's going to be a while. I don't know. I can't speculate. I wouldn't be surprised that it's more than a year.
I mean, they basically have one whole part of that gone. They were able to get and at least clear. They actually have been moving pretty quickly, at least clearing the debris and the steel and concrete up. But they had the POTUS was notified. Nothing from Transpo Secretary. Nothing from him. Thankfully, there were no. They had no injuries or fatalities due to the collapse. But they said restoring the highway is going to take months. They're trying to look at what they can do beyond detours. But good heavens, that is a terrifying thing. That looks awful.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so some of the other, this is interesting. Majority of Americans do not support trans athletes competing against women. Duh. 70% say athletes should only be allowed to compete on sports teams that actually align with their birth gender. Because you keep seeing this huge, significant number of these male athletes who've even competed as men. And then they decide to change over, after they're in their 20s? And then start competing against women. It's kind of, you know, good heavens. I wanted to touch back on this story. So this, I told you about the four siblings that were rescued out of the jungle following a Colombian plane crash that killed their mother and the pilot. This is an amazing story. Four children survived 40 days in the Amazon jungle. Age, get this, 13, 9, 4, and 1. Now, the 13-year-old and the 9-year-old apparently knew from their family what fruits to eat, what to do, so they knew how to survive because there's a lot of poisonous fruit, etc. That part of the jungle where they were also found is also notorious for having like jaguars and, you know, all kinds of, I mean, snakes and, you know, poisonous spiders, and not to say, you know, like armed rebels that have been fighting over different, you know, territories. So that's like really significant. 40 days. So they rescue them. The dad was right there when they brought them on stretchers out to go get the medical treatment. They said other than being dehydrated, and having insect bites, they're fine. And the 13-year-old is being hailed as like the MVP. Can you imagine like knowing, you know, what fruits to eat, what not, how the water's safe to drink, all this other stuff? That's unbelievable. So good for that kid. That's pretty much awesome. That's pretty awesome. We told you the Gilded Age. That was one of the Andrew Davies things that they came out with like earlier this year. One of the cast members said that Ron DeSantis was a KKK wizard during her Tony Award speech. So brave to say that, knowing that A, it's not true, and B, you can say whatever you want. There's no accountability. Stephen Yates joins us next.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
China and Cuba have now reached a secret agreement, we are told, for China to establish an electronic facility on the island, which would allow Chinese intelligence services to scoop up electronic communications throughout the southeastern U.S. What is your reaction to this?
Look, I've seen that press report. It's not accurate. What I can tell you is that we have been concerned since day one of this administration about China's influence activities around the world, certainly in this hemisphere and in this region. We're watching this very, very closely, and we will, and we have, and will continue to take steps to mitigate any potential threat that those activities might pose, so that we can make sure, and we are.
So that's John Kirby. He says the reports that we saw over the weekend of China establishing this spy base in Cuba is inaccurate, but it seems like that's inaccurate that he said it was inaccurate.
That's accurate.
So it's accurate to say that him saying that it was inaccurate is inaccurate.
That's correct.
I can't trust any of these people. This is kind of concerning, you think? Just saying, for them to consider establishing a base in Cuba and having done it. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lesh here with you. Bottom of this third hour. Joining us now, the first person we thought of. I have two of the most awful topics to bring up, this being one of them. Stephen Yates at Yates Comms, and you know him as Senior Fellow at America First Policy Institute, Chair of the China Policy Initiative, and at Yates Comms on Twitter as well. So it is accurate to say that he's inaccurate, that it is inaccurate, correct?
Well, Dana, once again, I thank you for bringing me the good news. This John Kirby fellow is like the worst version of nails on the chalkboard for me. He's once again hit for the cycle in the great game of major league lying. He did this whole routine with the spy balloon, which is a nothing burger. There's nothing going on. But then we'll spend some cool $1 million to blow it out of the sky after it's done. And there's a bunch of other balloons, too. But that's just silliness. And so the same dude who was lying big time through all of that does it again. Oh, there's nothing there. I saw that. And this is not real. Except it's so real that it happened during the Trump administration, too. And darn it, it's their fault.
And so yeah.
Just running through this same cycle, rinse and repeat. I thought the whole deal with Lucy and the football was at some point Charlie Brown doesn't kick it. And if we had any journalists in the White House press pool, besides like James Rogan and Simon and a few other people that will ask a real question, you'd think this would start to matter to a few people.
This is really concerning. This is 60s level kind of stuff, like Bay of Pigs, all sort of all over again. I mean, if everything is to be believed, but is it? So they have a spy base in Cuba, China.
Well, they have tons of spy bases.
I mean, they had one in our police. I mean, here in all in New York City, they had all these like police sub-departments.
Yeah. They might even have a few congressional offices and think tanks where they have privileged access to. Who knows? Because no one's asking questions. And so, it's not new that China would seek advantage. Right. It also is deeply troubling because as they turn the heat up on Taiwan, my friend and colleague at the America First Policy Institute, John Ratcliffe, who actually was the head of the Office of the National Intelligence at the end of the Trump administration, could say categorically that some of what Kirby was saying wasn't exactly true. He's emphasized, look, if China's looking to make for a distraction, Cuba is a significant distraction. It's not far from Central Command and Special Operations Command of the United States. It's looking out over the Atlantic Ocean and the Caribbean. There's a lot that they can do from that place, but we shouldn't kid ourselves. They've been having privileged access to us through cyber means, through space, through balloons, through privileged access to our universities and media and think tanks and all of that stuff. So this should be a wake-up call, I would hope.
A wake-up call indeed. We're talking with our friend Stephen Yates. Now, it came out, like, I've seen, you all, wars and rumors of wars, but it was said that the United States is reportedly preparing evacuation plans for American citizens living in Taiwan. And they were talking about some Chinese warplanes that were going into Taiwanese airspace. And the tensions, as you were just saying, increasing. So is there any truth to some of the things that are kicking off? Because it was reported, who was it, like the CIA, I think they were saying was pushing this out, or saying that by 2030, China, Xi Jinping had said, had told China to prepare for invasion by 2030 or something to that extent. What is the real story with us?
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is hard to deal with because we have to live with a degree of uncertainty. We don't get to know what the evil, closed off, unaccountable dictator of China wants to do. And his people obviously don't get a say. And so what credence could we have in some special intelligence that says at a future date, past the current administration and maybe past the lifetime or the career of the analyst who wrote that report, what it has to say? Really, we live with the need to deter an aggressor. We need to help others help themselves so that we don't have to get drawn in. And my goodness, the Chinese on the mainland have been threatening Taiwan since the 1950s. If this is the time that our great American bureaucrats have woken up and said, oh, shoot, we better come up with an evacuation plan, there is no hope.
Ooh,
if that's true.
Point.
But really, I'm sure that there always have been evacuation plans. And I think that we should be thinking seriously about that kind of stuff. But the Taiwanese people have lived with this threat my whole life and then some. I don't think they're fleeing. And I don't really think that American officials should be either. This is part of the theater. The answer to it is to get serious about helping Taiwan, Japan, and others deter China and start undermining the legitimacy of China's leader, who, unlike his predecessors, has really turned on the gas with the threats.
You and I were talking with our friend Stephen Yates. We've talked before about this, too, because it seems that this isn't like with Russia. It's not like with, even some other, geopolitical foes in other theaters. It seems like the only thing that we learn from what China is doing, you just mentioned Xi Jinping, China being entirely closed off, is just from what they put out publicly, from either their public social media or what someone hears someone saying or what they think is being told to the military, because we really don't have any like deep rooted intelligence. Not that I would want to identify and publicly put on blast, whoever they are. But it just seems that if we did, I feel like we would have a better understanding instead of like, well, it could be now, it could be in, 20 more years. I mean, we just really don't know. Is that kind of like an accurate assessment? Because it seems like it's very, very difficult to get something like that going in Beijing.
It is difficult, but what we don't have any obstacles in doing, but for our own silly selves, is sowing doubt in their mind about what their options really are or what the consequences might be. Or showing ourselves serious enough that we're going to decouple our strategic supply chains from them no matter what. Doesn't matter if there's going to be a huggy, air-kissy meeting between a Secretary of State and the latest demon spawn from the Communist Party. If they can have their meetings, they can talk. But if the Chinese leadership saw we're serious about doing what we're doing and we're going to work with the real world, not the Communist Chinese world, and we might have made this big mistake and it's expensive, but we're moving. And your choice is to accommodate us or you're going to pay the price. And we do nothing to really give any credibility to that kind of deterrent message to China. And that's 100% on us.
And you're right. And I feel like it makes other countries easy in their neutrality or their pretend neutrality.
It does. Absolutely true.
I was looking at this survey. I'm sure there are a dime a dozen, but it seems like the majority of, especially looking at some of these European countries, maybe it's because they have to deal with Russia or whatever else it's, they think might be closer. Although this would completely just affect everybody, starting with global trade, chip shortage, everything. But it just seems like the appetite or that they view it as, well, we'll remain neutral, or it's just like little overtures, maybe kind of to the United States or Japan. And sometimes is Japan even aggressive enough? I don't want to, criticize beyond, my scope of knowledge with this. But It always comes down to the United States. It always comes down to the United States. It always feels like we have to be, which I'm in the face of true evil, I don't mind being the first to risk things. But at the same time, it just seems like throughout world history, since the creation of this republic, we have always had to lead off with being the most aggressive, save for perhaps our response in, you know, World War II. I mean, what is your thought about this? And are other countries in, you know, in the Pacific, are they doing enough to really take that stand? Can they?
Well, I would say that no one is doing enough. And I don't really blame a lot of countries for bandwagoning behind the United States. We're the biggest economy. We're the technological innovator. Mm-hmm. We guaranteed multiple generations of freedom and prosperity. There are a lot worse lodestars to bandwagon behind. And if we have reliable and sensible leadership, it's the right way to go. And we've conditioned people. We also came out of World War II, where we did drop two nukes on Japan and write a constitution for them.
We may have gotten in there a little later, but we ended it real quick.
We did put some restrictions that kept them in a box for a while, and we had a strategic reason for that at the time. But that's a long time ago, and it's a different world. So they're doing a lot better now than they did when, say, I was in the White House in the early 2000s. And so the relative progress is to be lauded, but no one is doing enough. But it's hard to blame them for not doing enough if we have such weakness coming out of the United States, such distraction. We have bozos saying the most ridiculous things about the nature of Americans, the nature of our leaders, the nature of our society. And then you're up against totalitarian one world vision from the Communist Party of China. It's just not a fair fight if we're going to divide ourselves.
Yeah.
And if our allies see that, it's hard to bandwagon because they live right there and they live with the consequences.
Last question for you. We haven't gotten into any of the primary or 2024 stuff, but I really do feel as though if we lose big in 2024, that it does seem like any kind of conflict with China is inevitable after that, particularly as a continuation of the existing policies. Your thoughts?
I have a hard time seeing it otherwise. I am blown away at the weakness that we have from a feeble commander in chief who stumbles in every way, physically, mentally, and otherwise. And these kind of propagandists who spin everything from every podium, treating the world as if it's a comms exercise. I think it's incredibly dangerous. And I worry if it's a Biden-Harris 2.0, the Chinese would be fools if they didn't see an opportunity there.
Yeah, I agree. Stephen Yates at Yates Comms. Always so good to get your perspective on all of this. One day we're just going to talk about like kittens and sunshine. It'll just be nice and fun.
Always
and
possible.
There you go. There you go. Good to see you, my friend. Have a good rest of your week. Thank you.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
You too.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
This is a stunt. It's embarrassing. It's pathetic.
I disagree.
Stunt.
I think he did the right thing. His state's not a sanctuary state.
Heart.
Well, Joe Biden
just wanted to help people.
Will you apply the same standard to Joe Biden? He's flying all these illegal immigrants.
Coordinating them. Coordinating
them. Excuse me.
I'm engaged directly with the administration.
They're landing at 3:30 in the morning in Westchester Airport. Not LaGuardia, not Kennedy. Westchester, you know
not
why?
Because
they're sneaking them in when states aren't looking and counties
aren't
looking.
But they're coordinated. There's a different spirit.
Oh my
there's
gosh.
A different level
no,
of engagement.
Not
leveling. It's different in daylight and darkness. It's not perfect. There's some humility in this.
Wait, there's a difference between daylight and darkness?
What?
Because Joe Biden flew them under the cover of night. That was an actual thing that happened. So I don't. That's Gavin Newsom who went on Fox News. Now I know. Welcome back to the program. I'm Dana Lash. Now I know I'm supposed to say things like, oh, well, you know, Gavin Newsom went on Fox News and that's a good thing that he did that, et cetera, et cetera. You know, give him credit where credit is due. But really, though, I don't know. Should I? Because I kind of feel like I think he can handle his own on Fox. I mean, I think more Democrats should do, you know, other networks. So I guess I'll give him some credit for doing that. But at the same time, that answer is just not. I mean, you can't. First off, Joe Biden also flew out illegal entrants in the cover of night. That's number one. Number two, there were also local officials who said that they were unaware that Biden was doing this. So that's not just me saying that. That's actually like CBS News that had reported that when he was doing it earlier this year. So it's the exact same thing. What's different is his reaction to it. I mean, he's already come out and said that he is behind Joe Biden and he supports Joe Biden. So I'm just saying. Just saying. They're two entirely different. They're not. They're the same thing. What am I saying? They're the same thing. It's just that they decided to go after it because one's a Republican, one's a Democrat. That's what it is. That's the whole thing. They were sanctuary areas. I mean, you can't expect, like I've said, like we've talked about so many times, like a lot of these border towns to handle. They don't have the budget for that. You know, Texas has been, we've been using our taxpayer dollars on this. So there's the big thing. Because we're running out of time here, and I wanted to touch on some of the Espionage Act stuff. That's kind of a bigger conversation, and I'm actually going to have some of that with Andy McCarthy, because he's going to be on with us tomorrow just to talk. This is going to be the biggest week for the indictment stuff. Tomorrow, Trump's going to be arraigned in Miami, and then after that, it's going to be kind of like the same thing with New York. So, like, this is the biggest week for the indictment stuff, and then the story's going to die down at the end of the week because then you're going to get involved in all the same stuff. You're not going to have like a trial for a while. All of that. So it's probably not going to be until like July before we see anything else that happens with us. Sometimes I think really these people really played their hand too early. Like if I was, you know what I mean? Like I really feel like they played their hand way too early. All right. Today in stupidity, Kane.
All right. The Tony Awards last night, we actually saw, yeah, Mon has this clip for TV as well. I don't even know who this person is. And I think this is one way to get attention. Danae Benton says this about Governor DeSantis. Listen.
Her education award. And while I am certain that the current Grand Wizard, Governor of my home state of Florida will be changing.
It's like, hey Siri, no one knows who I am. How do I get people to know who I am?
Yeah, she wasn't even like one of the main actresses on The Gilded Age.
No.
And I just think that's so lame. I mean, if you can't tell the difference between, you know, someone who is simply fighting against corporatism and then maybe you shouldn't opine on it. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's why she's only been a bit actress on a series that's only going into its second season. All right. Yeah. Well, folks, that does it for us tonight. Have a great night. I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow.